if you're not resting and you're always on the go, when do you have time to really focus on yourself? You are your best project, no matter who you are in the world. You're your best project.
Hey there, and welcome to Work is Third, the podcast that is all about indulging in rest, setting boundaries, finding joy, and putting yourself first. I'm Dawn Hunter, your host, and I'm so excited you're here. Today, I'm joined by mindset and wellness coach Adam Wilson, founder of the Inner King Initiative and host of the Hustle and Heal podcast. Adam shares openly about growing up in a turbulent home, navigating identity and anger, and how he embraced healing. There's a lesson for all of us on breaking old patterns and rewriting the stories we inherited. Let's dive in. Hello, Adam, and welcome to Work is Third.
Thanks for having me. How are you today?
I am admittedly tired. I just showed you, but I'll show the people who are watching this one of my vices, which is Red Bull. I'm tired today, but I'm also really excited to have this conversation with you.
Absolutely. I hope you get your wings too.
Me too. Well, I'm looking forward to the conversation. You're a mindset and trauma coach.
Mindset and wellness coach, speaker, podcast host of my own as well.
That's right. You are the host of the Hustle and Heal podcast, which is very similar themes to Work is Third. So I think this will be a fun conversation today. But before we dive into any of that, I would love to ask you for a word to describe how you're doing today.
I'll say optimistic. You know, things, especially with transitions happening, we sometimes kind of get into that, like, I'll say kind of depression, kind of. We get stuck and like scared, but I'm just optimistic about where I'm going in my transition I'm going through now. So optimistic for sure. Feeling good.
It is like divine timing, perhaps, that you said that, because I was just journaling this morning about how I feel really like I'm in a period of transition. And I do also feel, like you said, I feel a little down lately, and it just feels a little strange to be going through. And it's one of those shifts where it's like, it's weird to navigate, but there's nothing objectively wrong. It's just like a feeling. Yeah, that's really interesting that you describe it in that way.
Yeah, it's definitely a feeling. And sometimes when feelings hit, instead of letting it pass, we sit in it. And like we sit in it for days and it just ruins everything. So I've learned to just like take the deep breaths in those moments and be like, okay, I'm going to be okay. I don't know where I'm going yet, but I'm here. I'm alive. I'm well. I'll figure it out.
Right. You will always figure it out, right? Yeah, it's a good point. And then really just be comfortable. I think I always try to tell myself to be comfortable with being uncomfortable.
Absolutely. That's where all the growth happens.
Yeah. Yeah. Maybe our bodies are scared of that and innately in some way, and are telling us we don't like change, but you got to go through it.
Yeah, it's actually scientifically proven. Our brain is wired to protect us at all times. So it's like, even when you're not paying attention to things, your body and your mind is scanning everything around you. And so when it feels that danger, it's like, oh my God, we got to fix this. We're not comfortable. It's like, sometimes you just have to be uncomfortable a little bit to get to where you're trying to get to, because what's uncomfortable now can be comfortable later.
Ooh, yeah, that's true. Now I'm curious of examples of what that is. And maybe we won't come up with one, but I'm like, yeah, what is something that is uncomfortable now, or could be uncomfortable in the moment, but be comfortable later?
One thing we've all went through, learning how to walk. You know, at first, when you first learn to walk, most babies are scared. They drop to the floor and they're just like, I don't know what I'm doing. But then once they get it, it's like they're running around the house. like my toddler was like that. She, for a while, she didn't want to walk. And she just fought it every time, to the point they had a physical therapist come in and say, like, maybe something's wrong with her. And I was just like, nothing's wrong with her. She just don't want to do it because you guys are pressuring her to do it. And I said that, and the next week, everybody left her alone and she just started walking. And now she's running through the house. I'm like, Z's like that fear, and you guys are adding pressure on top of the fear that she already has.
That's actually a great example. I was definitely overthinking it. I was going to try to come up with something deep,
simple.
But like, yeah, learning to walk, learning to do anything new, really, is something that you later become comfortable with if you keep at it. Yeah, love that. So tell me more, if you're open to it, about what transition you're going through that you're feeling optimistic about.
Well, I've been in tech for like the last 10 years, and I got bored with what I was doing in tech. I felt like it was like a repetition all the time, right? And so now I've moved more into like the coaching realm, just trying to working with men and just helping guys just to find themselves, find a leader that's in them. I like to call it the inner king. And so that, and now I'm at this space now. It's like, okay, God, I don't know what I need to do. Like, I'm stuck. What I need to do? I took all of last week off and did nothing and just rested my mind and my body and just didn't think about work or anything. And I kid you not, like maybe Monday morning, I woke up and I was like, okay, combine tech and combine mental health. And like, let's do the work there and go down that path. So now I'm like, okay, I know where I'm heading. I just have to get there and make the steps to get there.
Isn't it amazing how when you give your brain a break, that things come to you like that?
Yeah, it is. Because I think a lot of people, we're trying to consume all the time. We're on our phones, we're texting people, we're calling, having conversations. We're in everybody else's business in the world. You know, you walk in, you might see somebody arguing. You're like, oh my God, what's going on? It's all these different things your body's ingesting, and if you don't give it time to process what you're seeing, your brain is not going to work at a high functioning.
Yeah, I have had a lot of aha moments, mostly journaling in the morning, because I feel like that is when, as long as I start it before I do anything else, then I'm not already thinking about my day. And so just ideas can flow out of me. And I know people who that might be an evening for them, or maybe that's out walking or something like that, but I find it a really valuable practice to like let ideas surface. And of course, a common theme on this podcast is not being too busy to make room for magic. So it's like, if you're always busy, you don't have those moments of magic because you don't have space for it and you don't have the time for it.
Absolutely. Do you like plan your day out before, the night before?
Yes, sadly.
I'm working on that. It's actually a really good tool, because if you're not thinking about it the day of, you already know what you're doing. You're just following your plan every day. I'm getting to it. I'm with you. I'm like, I get up early in the morning, like then I think about everything or kind of go through things and give myself that break first before I think through everything. And then I go through my day, and some days are a little bit better. But if I realize if I plan my day prior, I'm a little bit more productive.
Okay. My husband and I had this exact conversation recently, because he doesn't do like the day before, and I do. I'm always like, I check my calendar, I look at my to-do list, I kind of prioritize a couple of things. I'm not thinking about it when I get up, because I already know what I'm going to do and I already know what my priorities are. And I do feel like I don't want to say more productive, because I'm trying to get away from using the idea of productivity, but more that it's like I have a goal to work toward and I'm motivated to do that because I set it the night before. And
you know what you're doing already.
Yeah, I know what I'm doing already. The plan can change and often does, but I think having a structure, like going into your day, is really helpful, especially if you're trying to stay on track with something, like whether it's fitness. We were talking about this in like the fitness context, like creating routines around our evening and our morning that just work in some extra time with our dog, walking and things like that. You could do that with anything, but how do you create those routines to support your goals? But you also have to know what your goals are. I guess that's maybe a challenge too.
That is part of it. Like, okay, what am I trying? And it's so hard, because like, you have to have goals for everything. Okay, my fitness goal, my health goal, my family goal, finance goals, it's like all these different goals. Like, how do I stay on track with all this sometimes? But it's amazing how we can do it.
Same. Yeah, I do that. I'm like, oh my goodness, I have so many things going on. I got in my car today, as a matter of fact, and this is not a goal, but I love my car. And the oil change light has been on for a couple weeks now, like oil change in 25 days, oil change in 20 days. And now it just says oil change due. And I'm like, oh my goodness, I just need to do this. I'm literally getting a reminder every day. And it's one of those things. It's like, you just have to work it in and make it, you know, taking care of your car part of your habits, or taking care of whatever it is part of your habits. Yeah.
Yeah. Cause you gotta take care of everything that you own. So it's always something, right? Especially with cars.
I was going to ask you, so you said you spent 10 plus years in tech. And then you had this kind of aha moment where you are wanting to combine tech with the work that you're doing as a coach. And what does that look like? How does tech support your work as a coach? And I think this is an interesting question, because there's so many apps and tools out there for our well-being, right? And I think sometimes for me, you can get overwhelmed by how many options there are. But what are you thinking? Like, how do you use tech in the work that you do to help people to heal and shift their mindset?
Honestly, I'm still working on that because I'm at the space now where I want to develop my own thing. But as far as the technology that I'm currently using, of course, I always say people are more drawn to their experience with you more so than what you're helping them to do. because it's like, I want to come to you and I want to feel good. I want to have a seamless experience where I'm not getting a headache every time I'm trying to like give you a payment or book an appointment with you. So with technology now, it's more so like, okay, my booking is website is set up, everything is the general operations things. But I want to create something that can I can give to the customers or give to my clients. For example, one of the idea I thought about was a journal, a daily journal that's like electronic. I can give my clients a link and they can go in every day, fill out how they feel, and they can give me a report. So I'm keeping track of my clients and how they're going. They can choose to share it with me or not. So that's one of my ideas that I'm having now, but I'm doing a lot of research because I'm like, okay, what's already out there? And then what can I use and what can I expand on? Or what is the main pain points in that industry for mental health?
Yeah, that's a good point because there are a lot of journal apps out there or apps that have journal embedding in them. I think I have like three on my phone right now that have some journaling component to them. But it's also a great tool for people who do use their phones quite a bit, as you say, like most of us do, to have that as a function rather than having a paper journal. I'm one of those people that still handwrites everything.
I don't like to be on my phone as much as I used to. Especially because all of the blue light that's coming from the phone. And then I think your brain processes it better when you're actually writing it versus when you're typing.
I think there's some science around that, actually. Yeah.
There is.
So handwriting actually is a worthwhile activity.
Yeah. And it kind of gets you like occupied. And think about it, you're on your phone. I'm in my notes. I'm typing. I'm like, I get a text message. Now I'm texting that person back instead of getting my thoughts out. And now when I come back to my journal, especially if it's like a business idea or something, you forgot about what you were thinking because you just had a whole like 5-10 minute conversation that derailed your whole train of thought.
You can easily lose focus on your phone with other notifications that you're getting. Got to take care of this text message. Got to answer this call. Oh, I got to check my calendar. And also, if you're neurodivergent, like you're already easily distracted anyways. And then you will forget. Like you'll forget what you're doing.
Exactly. I had to get to the point. I think one thing that helped me with it was turning off my notifications. Just turning them off the next day, I think I spent 2 or 3 less hours on my phone. It's like even now, I don't go to social media unless I'm going to post something. I might have my random times where I'm like, oh, I'm not doing anything. Let me just go scroll real quick. But most times I'm like so focused here, like, and I put my phone on do not disturb to where phone calls or anything that comes in, if it's not important or not family, I don't see it. So it helps me to stay focused on what I'm working on.
Me too. I actually use do not disturb, but I don't use it during the day. I do use it overnight and then until like 9:30 in the morning. So even though I'm awake, I don't want my phone to interrupt my peace in the morning. And so it's always on do not disturb. Yeah. Yeah.
That peace is the best part. That's my favorite part of the day. Just waking up and it's so quiet and I get to just do my routine every day, go to the gym and work out and everything. And then like come back and like, all right, I could take on the day now. Like I got a lot of my energy out and I feel good now.
Yeah. Yeah. I love that too. A couple of days a week, I do work out in the morning as well, but I am not a morning workout person. I've had guests on the show. We talk about that, but I'm like, I cannot get myself up in the morning and do anything but walk or maybe yoga or Pilates, but like I'm not doing weights or whatever.
Yeah.
But it sounds like that's part of your routine.
Oh yeah.
4 a.m.
I'm at the gym. Like between 4 and 5, I'm like getting up and getting to the gym. So it's like my time of arrival kind of changes a little bit, but in that time frame, I'm there. And I'm trying to switch to later in the day. I'm like, okay, I'm tired of 4 a.m. But it's because it's still a struggle, no matter how long you've been doing it. Like I've been doing it consistently for over a year. And now I'm still like, okay, I don't want to get up right now. Like I just need like a little bit more time sleep.
Now, is this because you have a toddler that you're doing the morning workout thing? Because I have a friend who he's a runner and he talks about he gets up early to get to his runs in. But he's had to shift earlier because they have a baby now. And was that the same for you?
For me, unless I'm going to a boxing session or like a trainer session, if I'm working out solo, it has to be first thing in the morning or I'm not going to do it. I may walk my dog like around noon, but other than that, I'm not doing anything. Like no lifting is happening.
So then here's a question. Are you consistent with your bedtime so that you can get up and feel alert enough at 4 a.m. Are you good about that? Yeah.
Yeah. That was a struggle to come across as well. Cause I used to go to bed like 10, 11 o'clock. Then I started to learn more about sleep and like REM sleep. And I was like, oh, I have to go to bed a little earlier now. So now by 9 o'clock I'm asleep or I'm getting ready to go to sleep. I'm sleeping no later than 9:30 every night and then 4 a.m. in the morning.
So you're not on your phone. Do you have a no technology rule at nighttime, like bedtime? No phones, no tablets, no TV?
Yep. By 8:30, me and my wife turn everything off. And we'll sit there and just talk until we fall asleep or whatever we just end up doing. Most likely we're just talking. And we just fall asleep one by one.
My husband and I do not have a really solid night routine, but we also don't have to get up at 4. And so we tend to stay up 11, 12 o'clock usually. We have tried to say, okay, we're going to put a rule about like no tablet, no phone after a certain time. I started setting myself a wind down clock. So at 10 o'clock, I get a reminder that's like, stop what you're doing and go get ready for bed. I don't always follow it, which is funny. So my husband now is like, I heard your alarm going off. Are you winding up? You know, so it's good trying to keep me accountable.
You still going?
Yeah, I'm still going.
It's a struggle because it's like, I have to do this, but it's just like, you really don't, but you just feel like you have to. But I did learn when I was learning about sleep and like sleep patterns, going to sleep before midnight increases like your rest. Any time that you get before midnight is doubled. So if you go to sleep at 9, from 9 to midnight is 3 hours, but in your body feels like it's 6 hours.
What? I've never heard that before.
Yeah, I did some study on REM sleep and it was interesting to me.
That's really fascinating. Because I used to wear a Fitbit for like 10 years. And one of the most interesting features to me was always what my sleep patterns looked like. And then I would always check, you know, how much REM am I getting? How much light sleep? How much deep sleep? And I have a pretty consistent sleep pattern when I do go to sleep. But the time of sleep was so inconsistent. It's like sometimes I go to bed at 10:30. Sometimes it's 1 a.m. And I still get up the same time every day. So I was like, yeah, I got to work on that.
It takes time. For a while, I was like that too. And then I just kind of like, okay, we have to. But I think one thing that helped me was literally turning off all electronics, like everything. Because as long as your body is seeing the light, it's going to stay up.
Yeah, that's a good tip. It's an easy strategy you can implement. Anyone who is struggling with rest or good sleep is get rid of the electronics, turn the lights off.
Absolutely. Blackout curtains can be your best friend too. I love blackout curtains.
Me
too. I like a pitch black room, cold pitch black room. You will probably have the best sleep of your life.
Yes. I say this all the time. I'm like, it needs to be like in the 60s in my house. And I like to get the blackout curtains and a blankie. And my best find in the last couple of years is I have this eye mask that is like it's real wide and it has Bluetooth headphones in it. And so I can play like calm music, or I have a what do you call it? EMDR music on there, is that the right thing? That kind of therapy that I don't actually know enough about it to speak eloquently about it, but the music sounds great.
Me neither, but I know what you're talking about.
Okay. Yeah. But I love it because it's soft. It's like pillows on your face, you know, and then you get the earbuds and you don't even have to listen to them, but I love that. So it's like, then it's really, everything's dark. And I sleep longer when I wear it.
See, you need the pitch black because when your eyes start to see the light and it's just like, okay, it's time to get up. It's time to go. Like even in the morning, I hate turning on lights first thing in the morning because your body is still adjusting. And as soon as you start turning on lights, your body feels like it's like midday, especially with like all the artificial light.
So is this part of your coaching that you do also, is like looking at things, like looking at sleep with your clients, looking at, okay.
Habits for sure, because you know that takes you in your direction that you're going to go. But that's definitely one of the things I always highlight, because if you're waking up and the first thing you're doing is getting on your phone, you're just shocking your brain. Like your brain isn't getting time to start getting into that mode of developing and like, okay, now I have to start ingesting things. And then while your mind is clear and not ingesting things, this is the perfect time for you to like meditate and have those thoughts to yourself and try to figure out certain things, because your brain is not doing 50 million things. One trick that I've learned, I forgot who I learned it from, but I learned it like sometime last year, was to act, if you're trying to solve a problem, ask yourself the question right before you go to sleep. And while you're sleeping, your brain unconsciously is going to start to try to figure out the problem.
Do you do that? Do you practice that?
I actually did it the other day. I did it like Sunday or Monday night. And then yesterday I woke up with a full plan. Like it's the first thing that came to my mind when I woke up, and I was like, oh, I gotta write this down. And I wrote everything down and I started working on it yesterday.
That's incredible. So I was going to say, like, did it work? But it sounds like it did work.
It's working. That's why I feel optimistic. It's like I tried it one time and it's like, okay, didn't really work out. And I was like, I have to go back and try it again because maybe like I was in a different space back then. And so now I did it again like this week and I was like, okay, this is perfect. I literally had a clear thought, a clear direction where I need to go. I just need to figure out the steps.
So I'm going to try that because I feel like I may have heard this somewhere before too, where if you really need a solution, like let your brain do the work while you're sleeping and think of it right before you go to bed. Yeah, that's a good idea. But then I get in the habit of, I maybe try to think through the problem instead of just saying, this is what I need help with and like letting it be at that, you know? Yeah.
That was me. I would be like, okay, let me try it. And I would ask myself a question and close my eyes and be like, okay, well, I could do this. I could do that. I could do this. I'm like, wait, I'm not supposed to be trying to figure it out. Because if you think about like our subconscious is just on autopilot. It's going all day, every day. With our conscious mind, we get the, okay, what if this doesn't work? Like the fear, like, oh, somebody said this. I don't know. But your unconscious is like, okay, let's figure out the problem.
Tell me how you got into coaching. Like, what was it that drew you to it? And how did you know, like, this was your thing that you wanted to help men with, right? How did you arrive at that?
Well, so like I said, I was in tech, corporate tech for like 10 years and I got really bored and I was like, man, I have to find something else because I was just at my computer all day working from home, just working. And my kids come home. It's like that. It got so mundane. Right. And so I started searching for answers. I was like, okay, what can I do? I found different coaches, is like kind of mindset coaches and everything. And one question that stood out to me was, when you're trying to find your purpose, what is one thing everybody comes to you for? And I said, everybody always comes to me like about mindset questions and like, you know, I'm going through this. Like, help give me advice, you know, like those type of things. And I said, okay, helping people, got there. And I was like, all right, now let me go back and look at my story and what did I overcome so that I can help other people overcome. And a little bit about my backstory, I grew up in a broken home. I feel like any family that isn't two-parent household is a broken home, technically. And so I witnessed domestic abuse and my parents divorced in the same night. At 16, I actually wanted to commit suicide. And so I struggled with like identity. I struggled with just anger, depression, all these different mental illnesses. And I overcame it just by just digging into myself and working on myself and just learning to forgive others. Right. And so I said, man, if I can do this, I can help other people do it. And I was like, let me try. And so I started going to a coaching program, which IIN, Institute of Integrative Nutrition. And I started to learn there and like even going through that journey, because they take you through the journey, like you're helping yourself. You're really coaching yourself. You're practicing with other people. And I just fell in love with it. So I was like, man, I'm having fun with this because I didn't like a job where it's 40 hours a week. I'm just at my computer all day. It's like, I like the flexibility of being like, oh, you know what? I don't feel like working in this moment. Let me go take a nap. Like a 15-minute nap a day can help you in the middle of the day. Like, let me go walk my dog. My wife wants to go on vacation. Like, okay, let me get some work done and go. I like the flexibility of it, right? And just being able to help people. And so that's what got me here.
Thank you for sharing more of your story. I had a difficult childhood as well. And I know one of the things that you have done is work with people on some of their childhood patterns. Is like that stays with us as adults, right? That we,
yeah, it does.
And it's hard to shift them.
Once you become an adult, it's those things, those patterns have stuck with you so long that you don't even realize you're doing them. Like I had a guy I met and he was like, man, my wife is this and she's doing this and she's doing that. Every other like statement was everybody else. And I stopped and I said, hey, do me a favor. I said, go home today and write to your former self and ask yourself, who let you down in your childhood? Any incident you could think of, name the person who did it and realize that you're carrying that baggage and you're putting it on everybody else. And I kid you not, the next night he was like, I did it. And oh my God, and he's like, everything just shifted for him. And I was like, I said, as a man, especially as men, like a lot of us are broken because when we came up, it was, hey, suck it up. Hey, hold that in. Don't let anybody see you cry. So we weren't taught how to let go of our emotions, or we were let down because we were the boys and we were supposed to be tough and supposed to be smart, be able to handle ourselves. And so now we're trying to do that same thing and it's wearing them out. It's wearing us out. So it's being able to identify and realize it just takes recognition to like, okay, this is why I'm doing that. I changed a lot of habits just by realizing this isn't my habit. This is a habit I watched my parents do.
I did The Artist's Way by Julia Cameron, which is kind of, I don't know, I describe it as like a program to rediscover your creativity and to heal from a lot of your own kind of generational and childhood patterns. And one of the tasks right. that she gives you in the book is to write down a list of the enemies of your self-worth from when you were a kid. And mm-hmm. it's, I think it's the same concept as what you're describing, which is, who are the people who did not support you? How did that feel? And did you let it go? Did you forgive? Did you mm-hmm. heal from that or not? And it's really a powerful exercise to engage in.
It is, because sometimes we feel like we've forgiven somebody and we really didn't, right? Or like, because it's like, oh, hey, I'm okay. And we're like smiling, waving. But it's like, if you still feel like that shock when they come around, their name come around, 9 times out of 10, you didn't forgive them. We always talk about like father wounds when it comes to kids, right? But we don't often talk about mother wounds. And there's a lot of men who are walking around with mother wounds. Like for me, for example, one thing I overcame was abandonment, because I feel like my mom abandoned me, right? Mm. But that showed up in my relationship with women. Like I always felt like the woman that I was dating was going to leave me. Even my wife for a while. I'll sit there and be like, you're still here? And she's like, yeah, I'm not going anywhere. I'm like, are you sure? And it took me a while to realize it. But it's just that awareness. And as I really realized where it stemmed from, I was like, okay, I can't put this on you. So I have to figure this out.
So I haven't heard that phrase before. And maybe you can explain it for listeners too. What are father wounds and mother wounds?
Just summarize just hurt that you felt from each parent. So like most common father wounds are like the father wasn't in the house, or he was a drunk or was abusive. Just any negative things that came from each parent.
Okay. Okay. So I am curious, did you have, because you said, you know, you had difficulties and you were in your teen years. Did you have men in your life who you were able to look to, who were handling their emotions and who were healed or healing, that you were able to find support from? Or, you know, what was that like for you trying to navigate as a teenager and get on a better path?
I actually did it wrong. I didn't talk to anybody.
Okay.
Actually, the whole like suicide thing, nobody knew about it until about last year, and it's been 16 years. It was,
oh wow,
like I was just quiet about it. But on the same time, I did find other men, like my football coaches and my track coaches, they were like always pouring into us. And that was always one of the things that helped me keep going, because it was like, okay, I have to deal with this at home, but I can go to school and actually get poured into and actually get showed love, because it was tough love at the same time, right? Like we would mess up and it was like, no, this is not how we're doing it. This is the principle. This is how we're setting it. This is the standard. And they didn't let us deviate from it. And so for that, it gave me a place to feel like, okay, I do belong, but I just have to find my voice and find myself in it.
That's really powerful. I sometimes say, how did I end up being successful? I mean, there are many factors, right? Or how did I end up being how I am today? And a lot of it is, you know, despite the difficulties that I had in childhood, I had people in my life who were there, like that had teachers like you, mm-hmm. I had track coaches, my friends, families. And I think they help keep the ship upright, right? As you're still trying to navigate the rough seas, which is
right.
Really powerful.
And it also teaches you like, You don't always have to rely on the people that's in the problem that you're dealing with, because there's people on the outside who are willing to help you, and they don't know everything. They just know what you're telling them, what your issue is, and their whole purpose is to solve that issue for you or help you to solve that issue or guide you to it, right? And that was what helped me. And even now, just going to go to random like men groups and like just getting around other men has helped me tremendously, because I always said like I didn't get a real good example of fatherhood or husbandhood, because when I was 7, that's when my parents divorced, right? And a lot of people don't realize, but in the first 7 years of a child's life is the most important, because that's when their foundation is getting built, right? And so at 7, I saw domestic violence. I seen my dad had to get stitches because he had a phone thrown at him. I seen like the whole divorce, and me being the youngest child, I was in the middle of it, like getting tugged here, tugged there. But I found safety and love in other people.
You mentioned being around more men. I mean, what are some of the issues? I was thinking about this when we first started talking. Is like, what are some of the things that your clients encounter that you help them work through, in addition to what you've already been sharing? So some of those father and mother wounds, their lifestyle habits. But what are some of the common challenges that they're facing?
Self-doubt is a big one. It's a lot to be a husband and a father trying to like raise a family and lead, especially when you're coming from a broken place and you don't really know where to go. So self-doubt has been the biggest thing that I've seen outside of like the childhood trauma. And a lot of it stems from that as well, too. I think everything kind of stems from childhood traumas, right? And it just festers up until as you become an adult. But I would definitely say self-doubt.
How do you work with people to build up their confidence in their own parenting skills and their skills as a partner and working through those wounds? What are some approaches that are important, like on a path to healing?
I would definitely say reading, just to kind of increase your knowledge and increase your self-worth, your energy, your vibration. And also just having those kind of conversations with a coach, like, hey, this is what I'm struggling with, because sometimes a different perspective can change everything for you. Because I might not, when you're in a storm, you can't see the entire storm. You're in the middle of it. And it's just like, you ever try to drive through a storm, like a really bad storm? And so having somebody from the outside come in and say like, well, have you ever thought about this or tried this? Or, hey, do this exercise. It's very game changing because it makes your mind go to another place that it hasn't been before or that it's scared to go to.
Well, I love that you said read more, because I do think reading is how we understand people, is how we better understand ourselves. Yeah. It's how we connect with and people and build empathy. It's so important to have stories in our lives and to have different perspectives. Absolutely. The power of perspective, yeah, absolutely is life-changing.
That's my number one tool, because it starts all here. It's all in your mind. One of my favorite books I love to recommend is The Untethered Soul by Michael Singer. And like, because just reading that book, it takes you on a journey. I think there were some times I just like closed the book and I just cried for a second. It was like, dang, this is what happened to me. And then I would open it back up and like journal it and say, okay, now let me keep going. It took me like a real emotional journey.
I have not heard of that book, but now I'm like, I'm going to make sure I write it down. I just finished a book. It's a fiction book. I just read Neil Gaiman's Neverwhere, which is a fantasy novel from the early 2000s. But I loved the metaphor in it, because essentially what I took away from this book was that you have the power to change your future, that you have the key to your future happiness all along. And I thought, that's such a powerful thing. And like you, I just sat there and reflected, like, how timely was it that I read it at a point in my life, to go back to earlier in our conversation about transitions, where I'm in a transition and it feels scary. And to read this story, and it's like, oh, you know, transitions are great and they're fine and they can lead to new and better things, but you have to be willing to let go. That was the other thing I took away from the story. You have to be willing to let go of the past. You have to be willing to let go of who you were to become who you're going to become.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And that's one of the things that The Untethered Soul talks about, is how, like, as a kid, we begin to build this internal fortress where we're trying to protect ourselves because that's what we're naturally supposed to do. And so you build this fortress and it's like you close all the windows, you close all the doors. Nobody can get in. Nobody can get out. You're not going out because you're too scared to go out. And you find yourself like unhappy. You find yourself like, you got all this baggage in there, so you have no room. And then it's like when you finally step into the light and leave everything behind, the world is so much bigger than what it was, what you thought it was, or what you remembered it to be, right? And I have a client, and we were kind of working through a living situation for her, and how this is one of my few female clients, and how she was like, man, I'm just not happy here. And I was like, okay, change your perspective. You're trying to stay there because it's saving you money, but it's taking away your happiness. She was like, oh, that makes sense. And I said, yeah. I said, try leaving where you are, because she was living with a roommate, unhappy. And she did. And I talked to her maybe like 2 weeks ago, and she was like, the world feels so much brighter. I said, right, because you're not sitting in bad energy and tensed up in this friction that you don't want to be. And so that affects your mind every day because you can't think clearly.
Right. And it's so easy to rationalize choices that we make we justify to ourselves why we're doing the thing that is making us unhappy. We can always rationalize it, but you can make a choice to be happy.
Right. It's like, oh, I'm saving money. It's like, okay, money is not the best thing. Money comes and goes. You're going to make some, you're going to spend it. It comes and go. But your happiness is like, you can choose to be happy every day.
You can and should choose to be happy every day. Yeah.
That's why affirmations, people say do affirmations. First thing in the morning, I'm always telling myself like, okay, today's going to be a great day. My life is going to change today. Like, I feel good. I feel like my best self. I'm here. I'm strong. And even throughout the day, I've learned, like, when you're watching movies, don't watch movies for the entertainment. Watch it for the lessons that's in the movies. And sometimes you'll watch a movie right on time. And earlier in this journey, it was like last year, me and my wife wasn't working. No finances are coming in the house. And I'm just like, bro, we're about to be homeless. Like, how do we get through this? And I kept seeing The Pursuit of Happiness come on my screen. And I was like, let me watch this movie. And I sat there and I watched it and I cried at one part. And I was just like, why do I feel like this is my life right now? And when I got to the end, I just felt so optimistic about it. And I just kept going. And things just got so much better. So it's like sometimes it is what we're ingesting, like via digital, what we're watching, reading, everything like that. It's really helped your mindset.
What I caught on to you saying, too, is that it was very timely. And I'm a person who believes like there's not really coincidence. Like things come into your life when they come into your life for a reason. Mm-hmm. And that was the message that you needed to receive. And you at first were not open to it, but then you did open yourself to it and it changed something for you. And I really try to live by that. If I keep coming across the same person or feeling the same way about a situation or whatever, like you have to listen to those messages or books that come across. I have like my bookshelves behind me, right? Like books that come across your path. Right. Why did I find this particular book in my free little library when I found it and choose to read it, right? Like
it's not a coincidence.
Yeah.
I believe that. I believe God talks to me through the things that I see, right? Or some people say, oh, I just heard him. And I'm like, I don't hear him, but I see things. Like I'll see things repeatedly, like the same movie will pop up, or I'll keep saying the same book, or somebody keeps talking about something. And it always triggers me to go check it out. Like, okay, there's a reason why. Or even sometimes when you randomly think of somebody's name, you should always reach out to them because there's a reason why you thought of their name, right? For example, I had a friend, when I first started telling people about my suicide situation. I had a friend who would like come get me and she would take me to church sometimes. A lot of times. And so one day she popped in my head. I said, let me call her and like really like let her know the impact that she had. And by the end of that conversation, she said, I'm so glad you called me and told me that because I've been feeling so worthless over here. I don't even know why I'm living anymore. And I was just like, wow. And it's like when you have those thoughts about people, just reach out. A simple, hey, like, I hope you're having a good day or something like that would change the trajectory of somebody's whole entire day.
It does. I've had those inklings, too, where it's, you know, somebody I may not have talked to in a while and something tells me to say hi. Right. And you're right. It is so powerful. And you never know what somebody's going through and how you could make a positive impact on their day. And it sounds like for your friend that you were able to do that for her.
Yeah. It was shocking to me because I was like, wow. And little moments like that, that kind of confirmed that like, okay, coaching is where I need to be. Right. Mental health is important to me. And so it's just like, this is where I need to be. And I've gotten to the point now to where I can tell like, okay, you need help. Like you need something. Let's figure it out because there's no reason for you to walk around feeling like this. Like, let's figure it out or let me be of service however I can be.
I love that, figuring out how you can best be of service. Like, what are your skills that you bring to the world that you can help, you know, to provide to others and help them on their journey? And it sounds like you have found what you want to do. And I want to actually talk about that briefly because the podcast is Work is Third. And so it's really one of the conversations that comes up is, you know, work versus a job and how many people end up in a job, say like you were in tech, right? And it's not the thing that you feel like is your purpose, but you have found something that brings you joy. And now it is something that you can make into your career. It can be your life now. But a lot of people are stuck in jobs that are not aligned with their purpose, or they don't look at it. I mean, I guess there's a lot to unpack, right? They don't look at it also as an opportunity. Like maybe I work in this job, but I don't love it. It's not my purpose, but it facilitates my purpose outside of work. But are you doing that thing? So even if you have a job that you don't love, are you still doing this thing outside of that that does make you feel fulfilled? Yeah. And so like I hear you saying for you, you're following your calling and it feels right.
Right. Well, first it didn't because it was kind of scary because my mind went straight to like, oh, my finances are going to drop because I don't have like a check every 2 weeks. But this is like, and now I sit back and think about it. All the meetings, I didn't want to be in them. Like I was just kind of just screen off muted on my phone. I didn't want to be in there. So it was like, why am I wasting my time sitting in this? Right. And sometimes you have to keep your job just so that you can take care of yourself. But even in that, like you said, you can find your hobby. That's something that's just, you're so passionate about it. It may not start off as a career at the beginning, but it can also be like a hobby that builds into that. And your current job can be where you learn certain things that help you grow that. And so for me, it was being in tech, I learned tech lingo. I learned to be around tech, how to operate in the back end, how it looks, how it's structured and everything. And I can take that same thing and create a technology for the mental health space that can help. And I can actually run it because I know what I'm doing, right? And so it's the experience of the season that you're in now can really help you in your next season.
That's right. Yeah. And keeping in mind that you're going to have another season, that we're not tied to the same life forever.
Yeah. It's not always summer. It's fall. Then it's winter. It's spring. You know, it's really these seasons. And if we really like pay attention to nature, nature shows us exactly how things work. Like, let's get off of like the social media and what everybody's saying. Pay attention to nature. It's always spring. It's always summer. It's always fall, winter, in the same rotation. But you know what's coming, right? And it's the same thing for us. There's some seasons where we don't have a job. We're just living off our savings and we're just resting. That's one big thing that we all kind of avoid is resting. But that's like the most powerful thing that we can do, right? And so when you're in that rest and then you're able to figure out and get ready for that next season, because sometimes that resting season is like your character development season.
Ooh, yes. Honestly, 2025 for me, that is exactly what I did most of the first half of this year was I didn't have a lot of income coming in. I was partly affected by a lot of the changes at the federal level. And I just said, like, this is an opportunity to rest. It's an opportunity to take a break. I haven't taken a break, like a real break, long break between jobs. I was never one of those people that got to do like a gap year before I went to college.
Right.
I've always worked. And because I had to work. And so it's like you leave one job, you go to another. Maybe you take a few days, maybe you take a couple of weeks. But for me, it was like 6 months of doing less and just saying, I need time to heal. I need time to think about my life. I need time for my body to figure out what it wants to be doing. And do I want to keep doing what I was doing for the past 12 years? Or do I want to make a shift? And it's so powerful to take that time.
Yeah, because we were all kind of brought up in this hustle culture. Like, you have to go out and get it. You have to make it happen. And it's just like, sometimes you don't. Sometimes you just rest. Because one, if you're not resting and you're always on the go, when do you have time to really focus on yourself? You are your best project, no matter who you are in the world. You're your best project. So it's when are you going to take time for yourself? Go on a vacation, take a nap. Like, I love naps now. I used to hate naps. I was like, I can't sleep. But now, oh yeah, get me on the couch, I'm out. And so it's like, you have to be okay with resting because your body has to regulate at some point. You have to get balanced. You have to get calm and just let your body heal. Because if you're not resting, your body's not healing. Our bodies naturally heal itself. Right. If we're giving it the right nutrition, giving it enough water, it heals itself. But if you're not resting, it's like, OK, you're always on go. Your body doesn't know when to stop.
Naps are a good strategy. So first of all, I've been the nap queen since like 1996. I don't know. But I like a nap, not just when I'm tired, but when I'm not having a great day. Like, even if I'm not really tired, sometimes it's good to just stop doing and to let your body rest. And even if it's for 20 minutes or 15 minutes, it can make a huge difference in the rest of your day. It can shift the energy for the rest of your day. So it's a really great strategy for taking care of your body and taking care of your mind.
Mm-hmm. There was actually a study that came out, but right before COVID, about like taking like a midday nap, like at least 15 minutes. If you take a 15 minute nap in the middle of the day, it feels like your body slept like 2 or 3 hours, I believe it was. Don't quote me on that. But you get enough rest and you like get a boost for the rest of the day. It's like a natural caffeine, right? And so that's how I adopted that. And that's why I like a lot of companies like Google and Microsoft. And at that time, I was working at in the city of Atlanta in Georgia, and they had started to implement naps. And I was like, why are we doing this? And that's when I got into the study. I was like, oh, productivity. It actually helps you get through your day a little bit better.
Oh, it does. Like, businesses that have nap pods, to me, that's the future of work, is creating spaces that support our natural rhythms and patterns and need for our brains to be restored, right? Mm-hmm. I think great organizations recognize that. And schools should too, right? I wish you had nap time in like high school when your body really needs rest.
See, high school, they're preparing you for the workforce because it's like work, 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 work. And it's just like, no, this is not the right way to do it. Like, we have to teach you guys to take care of yourself too and not just be the number on the line working whatever you're working. That's why I've said whenever I get employees, one of my things I always tell I was gonna do is incorporate naps throughout the day. Like, y'all go take a break. Go do what you have to go do. Like, don't run errands. Just take a break from life, from work. And Fridays, see you guys on Monday. Like, 4 days a week is way more productive than five.
It is. And the research in countries that have implemented 4-day work weeks is clear that you have greater productivity, you have better retention, you have better engagement among your employees. You know, I think part of why I started this podcast is really to reframe the conversation about work and our relationship with work. Right. We have to have a relationship with our bodies and our minds first, and we have to be in environments that support our health. And work, you know, is part of an ecosystem that is not healthy for everyone.
It's not. There are some great environments, though. My last one that I was in, I did a contract for the city of Henderson in Nevada. And just being in that workplace, I think that was the best one I've ever been in, because it was 4-day work week, like 10 hours. I'd rather work 10 hours a day for 4 days than work 8 hours for 5 days, because there's still that extra getting up and getting ready time on that Friday that I don't want to do. Right. And right. So just being in that environment, I watched like how happy everybody was. It was like always joyful. Everybody was like laughing, and they always had different events that poured into their employees. And I said, see, this is the environment that people can thrive in, because you shouldn't just see me as a number, as an employee, a replaceable asset. Like, I'm still a human at the end of the day. Right. And so I should be able to still be able to take care of myself, even though I'm here.
You should be able to take care of yourself at work or in any environment that you're in. Like, we have to make that a normal part of how we live, right? It has to be our life.
Right.
So you mentioned, you didn't use the word conditioning, but that's immediately what I thought of, because I've had other guests who have talked about how school prepares us for work. You mentioned the word hustle. It conditions you. Tell me a little bit about your Hustle and Heal podcast.
So I originally had a podcast called The Underdog Lounge. I had a co-host and we came together to share underdog stories, because when you see these successful billionaires, there's like, okay, how did you get here? Right. And sometimes those people seem out of touch because they're so high and they're so mighty. Right. And so we got everyday people who were just being successful, like in a small group, and say like, okay, how did you get here? What are some lessons that you learned? Last year, my co-host ended up just ghosting me. Use the right word. He ghosted me. To this day, still haven't talked to him. And so I went through this transition period of while I was trying to figure out like what direction I was going to go with the podcast, because I actually enjoyed podcasting. It was pretty fun just to get on here and talk, right?
Yeah.
And for a while, I couldn't figure it out. And so I sat in my story and I was like, okay, what did I do wrong that could be like the answer to the problem? And I said, man, I was hustling so hard. I was hustling that I forgot to heal. Right. And so I created the podcast because I said, let's talk about the hustle, but let's also talk about the healing of it. Right. Let's talk about what you should be doing to take care of yourself, your mindset, even still sharing those same stories and just having just healthy conversations around a community and everything.
So we've talked about healing a lot. And I'm curious, because on this show, we've talked about things that a lot of guests have brought up, which is the way that we're conditioned in childhood, breaking generational patterns, the impact of our parenting and our childhoods on the patterns that we have today. I'm curious of what has come up on Hustle and Heal that you would say, like, this is a big aha moment or a theme across your guests.
A theme for mine would definitely be childhood trauma. Sometimes my guests will talk and they'll realize like, oh, I'm only doing this because this is just my tradition, right? I had a guest have a one-on-one with me after we recorded, and we were just talking. So he was like, man, I have this goal to like, get my nutrition right, but this is how I eat. And I said, okay, well, why do you eat that? Well, that's just traditional Dominican food. And I was like, oh, okay, but do you have to eat it just because it's traditional food? Like, he was just like, I guess not. And I was like, well, there you go. Right.
Right. We're not that intentional sometimes about what we experience in childhood and how that still shows up in our lives today.
Mm-hmm. Because we're naturally afraid to uncover things. And you just never really know. A lot of us are so scared to go back and just say, what happened? Like, because there's some memories that are hidden. Like, you put them in a grave, and just being able to say what happened brings them to the forefront so you can heal. But it is hard to go back. It's hard to go and like think about who hurt you or what hurt you and trying to figure out how to heal from it. It's hard. And people, we typically run away from the uncomfortable things. It's the fight or flight mode.
Yeah. How do we get out of fight or flight mode? Like, what would be your piece of advice to leave listeners with today?
Like Nike, just do it. Like, you just have to do it and embrace the uncomfortableness. Journal and like your findings and the things that you're thinking about, and just look at the patterns. Right. And if you can't do it by yourself, get a coach. there's a lot of coaches who are out here willing to sit with you and help you work through it. Throughout your journey, you might meet other people who have experienced the same thing or going through the same thing as you. And so you kind of build your little community of people and you're all helping each other.
You are helping each other. And I think it's important, like you were saying, to do it even if you're scared. Do it even if it's uncomfortable.
Because you will never not be scared until you do it, right?
I really appreciate, number one, just this whole conversation, but two, like your incredible openness and vulnerability. And it just, I think, made this conversation just so fun to have, because I think it's sometimes rare to find people who are willing to be so vulnerable about the emotions and the challenges that they've experienced and share that with others, but use that also as a way to help other people heal. So I just want to say I appreciate that very much.
Oh, I appreciate it. I believe that your story and what you're going through is a testimony to help somebody else.
It is. So thank you for sharing your story here on Work is Third.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you so much for listening in to this conversation with Adam Wilson. I'm grateful for his honesty, vulnerability, and deep commitment to helping people heal from the inside out. If you resonated with this episode, be sure to check out his Hustle and Heal podcast and the books he mentioned. We've linked everything in the show notes. And if you're enjoying Work is Third, please subscribe, leave a review, and share this episode with someone who might need it today. Remember, you deserve rest, joy, and a life that feels like yours. Work is Third. Put yourself first.